Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Today I'm really, really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Christine Stark. She is the author of Nickel, A Tale of Disassociation. This book conveys dissociative state born of a world formed by persistent and brutal incest and homophobia. And in this interview, Christine is going to explain to us about DID, Dissociative Identity Disorder, and we will touch a little bit on incest and homophobia. But before we start chatting with Christine, I want you to know a little bit about her. Christine Stark is an award-winning writer and visual artist whose work has been published in numerous periodicals and anthologies. She is a co-editor of an international anthology titled Not For Sale. Christine has also spoken at numerous conferences, rallies, and universities nationally and internationally. She has been on National Public Radio's Justice Talking, and she has appeared on national TV. She has been a community organizer and activist for nearly 20 years. She is the 2009 Pushcart Prize nominee and a 2010 Loft Mentorship winner in creative nonfiction. In 2011, her poem, Mama's Song, was released as a CD in collaboration with musician Fred Ho, and her novel, Nickels, the one that we're talking about today, was published by Modern History Press. Christine teaches writing at Metropolitan State University. She lives in Minneapolis with her partner, April, and their dog and cat. Hi, Christine.
Hi.
This is an interesting book. I don't know what else to say. I started reading it. I've had to put it down several times. And to tell you the truth, I'm not done. I was really hoping to have it done, but finished reading by the time I talk to you. It is so powerful and so heart-rending that I can't sit there and read the whole thing at one time.
Yeah, I've heard people say what you just said, and then I've heard other people say, I started reading it and I couldn't put it down and I read it in 2 days. So it's interesting, you know. People seem to have kind of one or two responses about how they're processing the information in the book.
Well, it's interesting because when I sit down, it's like I flip, I'm just right into it, and then all of a sudden I have to stop. It's like, okay, I've had enough. I think, you know, it just probably all depends on the types of experiences we ourselves as readers have had.
Sure, absolutely, yeah.
And the first thing I want to talk to you about is DID, Dissociative Identity Disorder, and of course that's the basis of the book. Just explain to our listening audience what DID really is.
It operates on a continuum. Of course, all of us have experiences of dissociation, you know, probably a couple of times throughout the day. You know, the examples that, you know, people like to talk about, you're sitting in traffic and you just sort of space out. And then it progresses into something that, you know, ends up being called a disorder when people have gone through an extreme amount of trauma. And it could be sexual violence. Herschel Walker, who wrote a book about being a DID, you know, the former football player and U.S. Olympic athlete. My understanding is that his experiences were that he was bullied as a child outside of the home. So it can be, a number of different traumatic experiences that cause people to split off and compartmentalize these experiences. And then out of that, you know, even sort of personalities or alters can be created who deal with these different sets of emotions or different situations. Some folks who have DID, you know, don't have these like specifically named alters. They might have, this is me at age five, this is me at age seven, and so on. So, you know, it varies, and people have different ways of experiencing and processing the trauma, but it is an extreme compartmentalization that, you know, results in these different parts of the person that is more extreme than what the average person experiences.
Is DID often triggered by an experience or something all of a sudden happens again and all of a sudden the person just goes back into, you know, whatever, maybe that five-year-old child or totally disassociate. When do the people, you know, usually go into DID?
Yeah, I've heard stories or seen it happen in, you know, a few different ways. I've heard stories or known people who, for instance, were sitting at a talk about sexual violence, and all of a sudden, like you're saying, they just had this, like, part of them sort of come forward, and they just, you know, ran out of the room and took off running down the road. And so that was just triggered by, you know, a story being told to them about sexual violence. And, you know, the way that some people think about that is that, well, it was time. You know, you were in a safe enough space in your life where you would be able to start dealing with that. And, you know, often people end up in therapy, but not everyone ends up in therapy. I've got some friends who are DID and, you know, they have lived their lives. They're in their 50s and 60s, and they've lived their lives basically just sort of managing through various, you know, spiritual beliefs and processing things in their own way and never having gone into therapy. So people, again, have a lot of different ways that it comes about for them, that they realize that they have this issue to deal with, and then people deal with it in, you know, a lot of different ways as well. So not everyone ends up sort of in the therapy track, although obviously a lot of people do.
And this is important also. You're talking about alter egos and so on. And so it's really important for the listeners to know that this is not, DID is not to be confused with this social personality disorder.
Yeah.
It's a different thing in itself.
I don't even know what dissocial person. I've never even heard of that.
Oh, okay.
I would have to talk to that. I don't even know what that is. Yeah, that. But good to know that it should be clarified. But I don't know what that is. I've never heard.
Okay. So we're going to continue talking about the DID. Now, let's talk. You mentioned alter egos. You said alters, but I'm going to call them alter egos so that there's more continuity to this. So just explain to our listening audience what an alter ego is.
Well, it could be a part of that person that has just sort of developed off and taken on its own name. For instance, in the book Nichols, you know, she has a couple of different situations in her life where she responds to a different name than what she is, you know, typically called. And so she developed some part of herself that, it, you know, considers herself to be called Susan and responds to the name Susan and thinks of herself as Susan, you know. And so those alter egos can be someone who's of a different gender than the, you know, what we call like host or the physical body. They could be of a different race, a different age. I've known some people who speak other languages. They have a part of themselves that speaks Spanish, and they're English speakers. And so it's really, I mean, I think one of the things that really drew me to wanting to write about this is hearing and knowing all of these different people with these different experiences. And for me, the mystery, I guess I would call it the mystery of the creation of these different parts of self in order to survive an unbearable situation is quite fascinating. And I don't think that we have to feel like we have to understand and categorize and explain every aspect of it. I think we can also sort of step back and appreciate that there is this sense of mystery, this sense of creation, and the power of each of us to or at least many of us to create that is quite fascinating to me.
And just for our listening audience too, just sort of for them to sort of get in place with us too, this is sometimes also called multiple personality disorder rather than dissociative identity disorder. And from what I understand, Christine, is that there needs to be at least two personalities for the diagnosis.
Yeah, correct. You know, and we hear stories about people with, you know, maybe they have 13 personalities,
mm-hmm.
seven, and then there's some people who have, you know, upwards of maybe 40, 50, 60 personalities, you know, correlating to the level of abuse perhaps that person experienced, and then, you know, the how many years it went on, the sort of chronic aspect of it. You know, another piece to that is that we kind of have this idea in the media or, you know, portrayed by the media as these, you know, people with dissociative identity or formerly known as multiple personality disorder who, you know, are they're not really functioning. They can't accommodate the experience of being DID. And, you know, that's something else that I think is really important, again, for people to understand as we sort of start to have more of a public discourse around the issue is that there, you know, there are folks who are on disability because they're DID, and there's folks who are working as therapists, and there's folks who are working as lawyers, and there's folks who are, you know, mothers in the home, and so on. And so to me, it's very important to remember that, like, you know, anything else, there's a great deal of diversity among people who have dissociative identity disorder, and we don't want to just sort of move with this one sort of stock stereotype of like, you know, totally out of control person who can't, you know, function at all in the world.
Exactly, and I'm so glad you brought that up. And, you know, it kind of makes me think that we probably, each one of us has some type of DID, because I can't imagine very many people in this world have never had some type of a traumatic thing that happened to them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, of course, and we disassociate.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, and it's all, you know, again, talking about that continuum. And, of course, there's a difference between someone who's spacing out while they're sitting in traffic and someone
right.
who is dealing with, you know, the official diagnosis of DID. But we're all on that continuum somewhere, and so we can relate to these experiences no matter where we are in that continuum. As you said, you know, we were all children once, and even if we had fabulous, you know, home life and parents, traumatic things happen to children. I mean, that's part of childhood. You may have, you know, just sort of separated off from that, you know, experience, or maybe just a little bit. But
exactly.
It's still there, and it's still the same dynamic and the same process that someone who has sort of quote-unquote full-blown DID goes through, and that you have to go back and reconnect yourself with that experience and open yourself up to those emotions and free yourself from that, you know, by connecting with it.
Well, you know, I'm just going to relate a little story just for our listeners to know how, you know, these little things could happen. It doesn't have to be, you know, some major abuse or trauma.
Yeah.
But in my case, as a child, I think I was about 4 years old, we had a huge thunderstorm and hail, and in my family's belief was that God was angry, and the hail came and it got all the crops, the gardens, everything was just flattened out. There was just nothing left. It was just one flat white mess, and I was told that God was angry. And if there's with thunder and lightning, and if he's really, really angry, then there's hail. And so I took the blame onto myself, and I, in my little four-year-old mind, figured out that I stole a cookie from the cookie jar when I wasn't supposed to have one, and God was angry at me and punished my parents.
Yeah.
It took me years and years and years to get over the trauma off that.
Mm-hmm.
And the light, every time, even still, I'm 65 years old, whenever there is a big thunderstorm and hail, I revert back to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I remember it. Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. And that's, you know, exactly what we're talking about. You know, in the book, obviously, there's just, you know, there's layers and layers and layers of trauma that she's gone through, but it's still, as you're saying, the same process. And as you're saying, it's not necessarily going to go away and be completely ameliorated. However, you can reconnect with it and have it, you know, the impact will be less on you.
Exactly. It's manageable.
Yes.
It is manageable. In fact, I got to a point where I enjoy the lightning shows, you know, and so I've been able to work with that. But, you know, you said 40, 50, 60 different personalities. Oh, my goodness. That must be what a, I can't imagine living in that body.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and again, I think it also goes kind of back to what I have seen with a lot of friends of mine. Like, we were in our early 20s, and they started to deal with a lot of, you know, abuse from their past, and they, you know, figured out that they had all of these different parts of themselves. And their lives turned upside down. They lost their jobs. They couldn't work. You know, they ended up on disability, on welfare, and so on. And at that point, you know, you kind of looked at, you know, their lives and you thought, wow, like this is, you know, this is sort of it. They're going to be severely disabled and chronically, you know, kind of quote unquote mentally ill for the rest of their lives. And they have families now. They're working full time. their mothers and so on. And it's that same idea, is that, you know, it all kind of hits the fan for a lot of folks who are dealing with this, and they may have a lot of parts of themselves, but it's something that they can, they will always be dealing with,
yeah.
but it becomes manageable, and
yeah.
they go on and they lead, you know, quite lovely lives. I mean, I know a lot of my friends have done that, and I know a lot of people, acquaintances, who have done the same thing. It's always there. It's always something you have to deal with, but this idea that your life is over or that you are going to be in and out of a psych ward for the rest of your life, it is not necessarily true. I mean, sometimes that happens for some people, but I've seen many people go through that with many parts of themselves and come out the other end and have good lives.
Oh, of course. And, you know, most of my friends are that way, too. You know, I mean, as I said earlier, I don't know of anybody that just hasn't had something that they have disassociated with.
Yeah.
So, now, I'm going to go to your book, Nichols. The character, the main character in the book, started off as a young child and progressed through. And, of course, she has many different names, as you had mentioned. But from what I read in your book, incest was the main trauma
yeah.
that caused her DID.
Mm-hmm.
I want to address incest. And, gosh, I mean, that to me is just so appalling, and I don't know. I just can't find another word for it, but it just turns me off. And reading that book and just, you know, going through, I really got connected to the girl in your book. Let's talk about incest. Like, why? Why would a father? I just don't understand it. I don't, my mentality just doesn't allow me to understand why a father would sexually abuse a child, an innocent little girl.
Yeah, and I think that there are different ideas about that, or different theories about that. And from my perspective, I have to say that after years of kind of thinking about this, talking with people, that I was talking to a friend of mine who is an Indian doctor, and he said at a spiritual level, a human being makes a choice to do something like this. And I know that there are a lot of people who, you know, would talk about it in different ways, but to me that really makes a world of sense. And when he told me that, it felt authentic to me. We have all these different experiences, right? You know, we can say, oh, well, this person, you know, was raped as a small boy himself and turned around and you know, did these things to his children and so on. And I don't think that there isn't any truth to that,
mm-hmm.
but there's people who go through that and would never do that to someone else. So,
right.
You know, I think there's a lot of different ideas about it, but for me, that's kind of where I have settled, is that at a really core place, I do believe that it's a choice that people make to act in that way. I mean, and then we can talk about the sense of ownership, you know, that we have culturally, you know, that, you know, fathers, you know, at one point not too long ago, legally owned, you know, or husbands legally owned their women and, you know, their wives and their children. So we can talk about sort of all those things socially, and that, you know, girls are sexualized in our culture. And I think that all of that is true, and it has a lot to do with why we have so much rape of girls and of boys as well in our culture. But for me, I think the sort of center of that truth is a choice that an individual makes to break into another human being.
Now, you had mentioned, Christine, that on a spiritual level, you feel the person makes the choice. I'd like you to tell us what that means to you.
Because I think that it puts the responsibility on the person who is violating, you know, the child. And that we don't see that happening. We see the responsibility being put on the child, or we see the responsibility being put on the woman because she was dressed this way. or whatever. And for me, there has to be, we have all these social factors, but there has to be an individual accountability. And without that individual accountability, you know, I don't think we have any sort of moral system in place to deal with the egregious violation of a human being. And again, I'm not at all saying that the social factors that we have in our culture, I think that they point people in that direction. I absolutely think that they point people in that direction. I mean, we have so much sexualization, particularly of girls, in pornography. We see it in our daily advertising. You know, it's you know, in many ways kind of at the center of our cultural institutions. However, along with that is the individual accountability of the person who makes the choice to physically hold down a child and rape them, that child.
I do not understand that choice, but I do agree with you that it is a choice. And in the case of Nichols, it seemed to me that the mother also took the choice to ignore it because she would have had to have known what was going on.
Yeah.
Mothers do. They just do. I mean, that's, we are. We're women, we're mothers, we're programmed.
Yeah, I don't know that every mother knows that. I don't know that. That's not my place to know or to say. But for this particular book and for, you know, many of the stories that we do hear, there is the unfortunate reality that the mother does know and, you know, it basically is complicit or makes it possible for that to continue on. And in Nichols, she's also a victim.
Yes.
She's being abused by him. So she's frightened of him. You know, he has power over her and so on. But, you know, she knows what's happening. She's doing the laundry. She's covering up for him. And so my interest in that story was, what does that mean to the girl who is being raped versus coming at it from sort of the mother's point of view? I really wanted this to be about the girl who is going through this. And what does that mean for a girl or for a boy who's, you know, one of their parents is perpetrating against them and the other one is aware of it to whatever degree and is complicit with it to whatever degree. What does that do for that child? What kind of world can they create out of, you know, their home where they are supposed to be safe, adored, loved, and cherished, and where the parents are working, you know, in essence, kind of working together in order to violate and silence that child?
It's just amazing. Although, you know, your book is considered fiction, I can't imagine any of that being fiction. You know, it just isn't, because this is really what is going on in our society.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's happening, you know,
right now,
in every neighborhood.
Yes, in every neighborhood. You're so right. You're so right.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through Direct Podcast, as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Christine Stark. As you've heard so far, she is very knowledgeable about DID, Dissociative Identity Disorder. Stay tuned because there is just so much more to be heard. If you'd like to check Christine out right now, her website address is christinestark.com. I want to talk about homophobia because it seems that recently more and more of that is coming out in our media, of course, and just on CNN, Anderson Cooper was talking about stopping bullying. As I was listening to that, it seemed to me the underlying issue for the bullies to bully these children is because they're perceived to be gay. And I'm wondering, is that homophobia that's also playing a part in these bullies?
In the bullying of children?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe that it is. You know, I mean, to me, that's the, you know, premise for the bullying of that child. You know, maybe that bully would have gone on and bullied someone who had, you know, a funny-looking nose or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I do believe that it's homophobia, that it's, you know, the fear of same-sex, you know, romantic love.
Mm-hmm.
That is behind that, and I think that it's a great thing that it's being talked about so much, and it, you know, it does happen. It happens to boys, and it happens to girls, and of course men and women, obviously, but the focus seems to really be on what is happening, particularly in the school system, and
mm-hmm.
you know, how to solve that.
Do you think that starts off in the home?
Can you say that again?
Do you think that starts off in the home, the homophobia?
I think that it definitely can.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would think that that's probably where a lot of it does begin. You know, I just the other day, someone was telling me about their 3-year-old son who saw two lesbians walking together, and he called them boys, and he said, "Mommy, what if I end up like those boys?" You know, he was talking about the lesbians.
Oh, wow.
And the mother reacted really negatively. You know, ew, that would be terrible, da, 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 da. And so, you know, there at age 3, that child's getting a very, very clear indication that that's not acceptable. I mean, she wasn't, like, advocating violence or anything
right,
like that. But,
right.
You know, I mean, children experience that even at really young ages to set the table, set the standard for how same-sex relationships, you know, are going to be viewed. And if that child is gay or lesbian, then that sets up, you know, a great deal of internal conflict.
Of course.
For them to be processing constantly.
And it could end up being DID?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually have heard, in particular, there was one woman who was lesbian, and she went by one name at work, and she went by another name in her sort of personal world, and
uh-huh.
She was not out at work, and so she compartmentalized herself and drew a very clear line. This is who I am at work. I have a different name, and this is who I am in my daily personal life where I'm living as a lesbian.
Was that by choice, or was it really DID?
I'm sorry. I wasn't saying that that was necessarily like DID.
Oh, okay. But that was her choice.
That sort of sense
uh-huh.
of dynamic, the compartmentalization
yeah.
and the using different names, you know, is very much related to what is happening when someone develops DID.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I wasn't saying that it was specifically DID, but
right.
the relationship is, to me, quite stunning.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You know, the way that we compartmentalize, I mean, we all have different parts of ourselves. You know, we're different when we're engaging with our 4-year-old than we are when we're engaging with our boss, of course.
Of course.
But when you start to really, like, clearly draw, you know, stark lines, and you develop a name for one
mm-hmm.
one part
mm-hmm.
of your life and a different name for another part of your life, that to me is you know, interesting.
Yeah. That's a good word, interesting. Do you believe that at some point homophobia is going to be a thing of the past?
I certainly think that it could be. I see
mm-hmm.
absolutely no reason why it couldn't. And it's not a given that human beings have to live, you know, with a sense of bigotry towards another group of people.
Yeah.
And we can look to indigenous cultures right here in the United States who traditionally have actually totally accepted, honored, and just incorporated same-sex relationships and not had, you know, any sort of negative consequence for their society or for the individuals. So this idea that it's always been this way isn't true.
No, it's not. You can see that in a lot of the artwork that's from centuries back.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been around a long time, but something happened. And as all things do happen, you know, it's, somebody starts it and the ball gets rolling, and pretty soon there's a whole gathering of people that, in this case, are homophobic.
Yeah.
They don't know why.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when you ask them, they really don't know why. So, and unfortunately, it's an imprint that goes down in generations.
I also think that I have seen ways and have my own sort of, you know, theory based on that, where I have seen people who have been abused as children, and so they have that, you know, terrible trauma and that terrible fear, and I think that there's ways that that sort of abuse as a child can be channeled into fear of something else, and it's totally irrational, and they don't understand it, and I just think that that connection is something that perhaps we should think about more, where someone's being, you know, raped, their father is raping them as a little girl. They can't hold that. They can't process that. They can't put it back where it belongs on the father. And it's like all of this fear and trauma shunts out on something else.
Yeah.
And it might end up, you know, expressing itself as homophobia.
Exactly.
You know, or we see the James Baldwin story, you know, about the young white boy in the South who has a African-American boy for a friend. He talks about how the African-American boy is actually smarter than I am. He admires this little boy. He gets taken to a lynching, witnesses the lynching, and then becomes a huge racist and a sexist himself.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I think that that happens, at least for some people with homophobia as
well. I think so, too. Gosh, Christine, this has been such a pleasure talking to you, and it just, you know, this is so prevalent in our society right now, and we really, really need to address these issues and put a stop to them. I don't think it'll stop today or tomorrow, but as each one of us takes our own space and makes the changes ourselves in the way we think and process things, you know, there will be a change. I'm hoping that there will be a change, that someday incest is not going to be as prevalent as it is today, same as homophobia.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Yeah.
And going back to that, you know, wound or wounds that we have,
yeah,
and being responsible for them,
mm-hmm,
that seems to be one of the keys to moving ourselves individually and, you know, as a society into a different place.
Exactly. Healing our own wounds first. That's where it starts. Christine, what is your website address?
It's www.christinestark.com.
There you go, listeners. It's Christine with a C, christinestark.com. And we were talking about her book, Nichols. And the subtitle of the book is A Tale of Dissociation. And definitely, as we've talked today about DID, incest, and homophobia, this is all in the book. As I mentioned earlier in the interview, I'm still reading the book because for me, it's something that I can only read a little bit at a time. But I just encourage you to read it because it is so informative and it really shows what is going on in our society right now. Thanks again, Christine.
Thank you so much.
And listeners, this is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.